Welcome to Winning the Challenger Sale, a podcast where we take you beyond the groundbreaking book that transformed the world of sales and share practical advice on how to show up like a challenger in your customer conversations. I'm your host, Jen Allen. Our goal here is simple: equip you and your teams to win more deals by harnessing your inner challenger. This is part of Challenger Inc.'s suite of products designed to give you everything you need to go from idea to action to meeting and exceeding your sales goals. Now let's get started. Welcome back to this week's edition of Winning the Challenger Sale. I'm your host, Jen Allen. Now, if you've been listening this month, you'll know that the theme for May is opportunity prioritization, which means we're picking the minds of some great sales practitioners on how they prioritize their territory and how they avoid wasting time on the wrong opportunities. Today, I am so pleased to welcome our very special guest, Tom Alamo. Tom, welcome.
Jen, thanks for having me on. Excited to connect with my new Chicago friend here.
Likewise. Now, for anyone who's not familiar with Tom, Tom is very widely known in the sales community, but I'm going to tell you Tom's job. I'm going to take a big old deep breath before I do, because this man is a workhorse. So here's Tom's short little job. So by day, Tom is a growth AE at Gong. By night, Tom is not only the host of the Millennial Sales Podcast, which is a phenomenal show, but he's also the co-host of the Pavilion Podcast. And as he hinted, he's also a very recent transplant to the Chicago area, and he is finally getting to experience what we call spring, which is in May, just starting. So excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to be here. I'm equally excited that I think this is the first 80-degree day of the year in Chicago. So the vibes are high, and excited to be on the podcast.
Let's ride those vibes. Okay, cool. Yeah. So Tom, let's get into it. You said, I've seen this several times, you are obsessed with helping other salespeople succeed because sales changed your life. So for those of us that don't know you as well, take us back. How'd you get started in sales? What was your first job? What happened from there? How'd you get to where you are today, including not just for your role as an AE, but also as the podcast host?
Yeah, for sure. And I think, one of the reasons that I love sales so much and have put so much time into this and the podcast and everything is just because it has changed my life. And we can get into how that is, obviously, as a career and financially, and there's a lot of great things, but even just who it helps you become as a person is something that, I've seen firsthand in me and a lot of other folks. But my first real sales job, if we're really going back, is actually I started my own magazine when I was about 10 years old with a couple of friends, and we would go door to door in the neighborhood and sell subscriptions, annual subscriptions. So before ARR was cool, we were selling for 50 cents a month or something and sold probably a couple dozen of those. But then after that, my first real actual paying sales job was in college. I sold Cutco knives for a summer. And going back to why sales I think has been so important to me is I'm actually naturally pretty introverted, especially at that age, not very confident. My mom was shocked and appalled that I was going to do sales for a summer and sell Cutco knives and go into people's kitchens. But that really changed the course of where I think my life was going in a lot of ways. And it turned into one of the best summers of my life. I made some really good friends. I learned how to cold call. I learned how to run a demo. I learned how to goal set. All these great foundational skills that I still use every single day. And then that kind of set me on the path to a couple internships. After school, I joined a great company called TechTarget, who's in the intent data space in Boston, moved to San Francisco, worked for them for about 5 years, had a short stint at a startup in 2020 for a few months before landing at Gong at the beginning of 2021. And so I've been at Gong for the last year and a half, have just been enjoying the ride and having such a great time and learning a ton. So have loved there's been a lot of highs and lows, as every sales career has, and maybe we'll get into some of that, but it's been a great journey so far.
Love it. So let me take back to something you just said. You talked about being kind of an introvert and your mom was like, "What are you doing, Tom?" I relate to that. What do you attribute to being successful? Because I think it's something I hear quite a bit, right? Sales are extroverted. It's certainly how I viewed the sales, the function of sales. What do you think changed for you?
I think I would label myself now as probably either an introverted extrovert or an extroverted introvert. There's some of me that does like to talk to people and get out and stuff like that. But to go to a conference like Dreamforce with 100,000 people is the worst thing I could imagine. that does not appeal to me at all. But I think a common misconception is that you have to be this slick, fast talking person that just loves people and like loves to go out and all this to be a good salesperson, when I just don't think that's true. And there are some people like that that are really successful. And there's a lot of people that, you know, use some other skills like listening and empathy and emotional intelligence and curiosity to their advantage. And so whenever I am thinking about where my strengths are, if I go back and listen to my calls and we do a lot of team call reviews, that's what usually sticks out to me about why I've been successful, is more of those, what people would label as softer skills, but I think they're really important, actually really hard to master, versus someone that is really extroverted and bubbly and enthusiastic all the time. So I think an important part of everyone's sales journey is understanding, where are you on that spectrum? What are your natural strengths? And just trying to lean into those, because that can make you a more authentic seller.
I love the way you put that, right? It is not a knock against anyone who is an extroverted seller. If you've got that natural personality trait, lean into it. There's a ton of people who are super successful by that. But one of the things I struggled with early on is I would look at those very extroverted, like super sociable people, and I would say, I'm going to have to find a way to act like that. And it never felt, to your point, like it was my authentic self I was bringing forward. And one of the things I've enjoyed a lot about having guests like you on this show is oftentimes those who skew towards more of an introverted type are super, super thoughtful about why they do what they do. I don't know what it is. It's been a common theme. So this month's topic obviously is about opportunity prioritization. When I asked you about coming on the show and asked you like what topics you want to discuss, your reply was opportunity prioritization. So what made you pick that one?
Yeah, I think it's a skill like Pareto's law, which is the people probably know better as like the 80-20 rule, is such an overlooked but important part of, I think, every part of life, but in particular sales, that we only have a certain amount of energy every day. We only have a certain amount of time, focus, attention, all these different resources. And so really what comes down to how successful you're going to be is like what your skill set is and then what you actually spend your time doing. So you can be the best salesperson in the world, but if you're focusing on opportunities and accounts that don't have a need, that aren't a great fit for your solution, aren't your ideal customer, then you're going to have average results. But if you work, you know, half as hard, or you're half as good as that other person, but you just focus on the really perfect areas and go deep with whoever those accounts or priorities are, you can make a killing. And so I think that's just something that's counterintuitive. When you first start in sales, I don't know about you, but I would, anyone that would talk to me, I would talk to them. And I would bring it down as far of a sales cycle as I could go. If our average sales cycle was 2 months, I'd go for a year, and I'm determined and stubborn that I'm going to close them. And if I think back now of all of those wasted meetings where I didn't know they were wasted, the prospect probably already knew it was a waste of time, but just trying to force something that wasn't really going to happen. And if I'd taken that time and just spent it in the right places, I can only imagine how much better I would have done when I first started. So I just think it's something that people don't talk about a lot, but makes a huge impact in how successful you are.
I couldn't agree more. Like, I'm of the mindset that persistence is definitely a virtue in sales, but to your point, it's to a point, right? And it's especially difficult. Like, I can imagine, we'll talk a little bit more about this, like with selling Gong. Like, I would imagine literally any sales organization could potentially be a customer. And I definitely got stuck a ton with Challenger. I would say, well, anybody could be a Challenger customer if you have a sales force. And I wasted so much time on companies that I firmly believe should be customers. The problem was they didn't. So I really relate to what you shared. So talk to us a little bit about this approach, like what goes on in your head, whether it's like, hey, there's three things I think about, or if it's just a gut feeling, how do you determine what is a right or a wrong opportunity to spend time on? And I know this is going to seem super obvious because Gong is so well known, but for anyone like a little bit less familiar with Gong sales motion, can you first start by talking about the type of sale you're pursuing? Because we've got all different types of companies that listen into this.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Gong is a revenue intelligence platform. And so we're generally selling to VPs of sales, chief revenue officers, now also a lot of heads of customer success and business development, really anyone that is customer facing in a role. So those leaders, and we're helping to record, analyze, transcribe those calls and give the leaders valuable data that they can use to make better business decisions. And so on the surface, we probably have a very similar type of customer that we're selling to, Jen. And on the surface, like, okay, so you sell to a sales leader. There's millions and millions of sales teams out there. So it must be a pretty easy thing to sell. But it's actually the reverse, because you almost have too much opportunity. And so I like to think of it in a few ways. One is, if you, depending on how big your company is or how long they've been around, the first thing I would recommend doing is seeing who are our most successful customers. What do they look like? What are the titles of the people that use it and that buy it? What types of companies are they? Is there a certain size? Is there an industry? Was there a pain point that they had? Whatever that is, like if I was starting somewhere new, that would be where I'd spend the bulk of my time trying to figure that out. At somewhere like Gong, because we're a little bit more established, we have that pretty well identified. And so then the next step I go to is, what can I see just doing research with third-party websites? So using things like intent data, I mentioned TechTarget earlier, there's G2, Sixth Sense, there's a ton of great demand bases, there's a lot of great providers out there that can give you signals as to what these companies are researching, what they're doing online. And so you can get some triggers of, okay, is there something that's showing an interest in what I might be selling? Can I maybe match that loosely to a need? And then I think the third piece is then trying to understand what's actually going on at the organization, which I think takes conversations with them. So the first two is research you can do on your own. You can prioritize which accounts to go after. And then once you're in opportunity stage, you start to have conversations with customers. To me, I feel like it's all about, you know, how deep of pain or challenges there are going on at that organization, because you could be talking to, on paper, the perfect person. Jen is the CRO at this billion-dollar company. It's going to be an amazing logo. My boss is going to make me sales rep of the year if I close this. But they just bought your competitor 2 months ago. Or you see a lot of companies with layoffs right now, but they just laid off 500 people. They're probably not going to spend a lot on technology right after that. And so on the reverse, there could be another company that doesn't have the pedigree, but just got a big round of funding, or just had this really important internal meeting about how they need to launch this thing for their sales training or whatever it might be, that is actually the perfect setup for you. And so I think for me, it's trying to understand, like, what's actually happening at the organization? How deep is the pain? Is it quantifiable? Is it something that we can really sink our teeth into and solve a big problem together? And if not, it's counterintuitive, but it's best to almost disqualify yourself from pursuing that any further.
You are like making me drool a little bit, because of you're one of those natural challengers, right? When you talk about quantifying the pain and looking at the business, what I love and what I hope our listeners are taking away is everything you said was about the customer target, all of it. And I'm always curious. You've described yourself as kind of like a learning machine. I've seen you write that a few times, and I love that. I think you have to be in sales. But did you always have that view of opportunity prioritization? Was there like a pivotal moment where you realized, like, shoot, I'm getting this wrong, I need to change it up to what you just described?
I've definitely had moments in my sales career where I put my eggs in the wrong basket. I've misspent my time. There's a few that I can remember where I had big deals on the table. And looking back, I can see we were totally not even talking about real business pain. It was just someone that kind of thought the company was cool, or, oh, this would be a cool product. But once it got to someone important enough to make a decision, it was a no-go. But truly, Gong changed my opinion working at Gong. My director last year, as a lot of sales organizations, we have a Monday forecast meeting, 10 a.m. every Monday. And we'd go through deals, and every single deal that gets talked about, if you do not have what the quantifiable business pain is, and I'm talking to you, Chris Orlob, if you're listening to this, it's not going to be a good conversation. So that's the first, it's like, we're not rolling this deal anywhere up remote, like anywhere close to up. And if you cannot tell me in a sentence or two what the quantifiable business pain is that we're solving, that was the first question that was asked anytime you try to loop in your VP of sales or get help or get a discount or get anything. It's like, what's the problem that we're solving? And so that just drilled it into my head, just like, I don't know, a basketball coach just makes you keep shooting free throws. That was just, that's my habit now. And so I need to make sure before I get off a discovery call that we've peeled back the onion enough where either we have that pain, or maybe it just doesn't exist and it's not a good fit. And so that really just built up my habit on doing that.
Oh my gosh, I love that story. And we get a lot of sales managers that listen to this, and I think what you just said is such a critical thing that seems small, but it is the consistency. It is the it's not doing a sermon every team meeting, right? It's like every week you are going to be asked the same two questions and you have a choice to make. Do you want to not have answers to the questions or do you want to look good in front of your team? I think that is a huge thing that oftentimes sales managers miss because there's so much we could learn about a deal. At the end of the day, Chris, you're amazing. I love those two questions and I love the consistency around it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's so many reasons to get excited about an opportunity, right? You can get happy ears and look at this company and we got a next call on the calendar and this and that. But at some point you're going to get exposed. Like if you're not solving $1 million problem and you have $1 million solution, someone down the line is going to say, hey, what are we buying here? What are we solving for? What's happening? I think it's different if you're selling a $2 wristband or t-shirt or something like that. It's probably a little bit different. But when you're getting into a complex sale and it's got a high dollar ticket item, there's someone in finance or procurement that is just waiting to knock this deal down if it doesn't have a true business case to it. So the earlier you can get that set, you're going to save yourself a ton of time and not have to get to what you think is the end and then have to really restart at the beginning because you didn't do the hard work early on.
Oh my gosh, yes. And how valuable to a buyer who maybe has never bought something like this before to coach them that, hey, if you're not thinking about this, you should be. That to me is delivering value in the sales experience right there.
Yeah. I think you have to have confidence in doing that because in theory, you sell your product all day long and your buyer may or may not buy your type of solution very often or ever. And so they might think they know how it's done, but you should be the expert, right? They should be able to trust you on not only the problem that you're solving, not only on your product, obviously in the market, but just on what the process should look like. And so I think even being upfront about that as part of the conversations, I feel like discovery conversations can get a little bit, they can sound like an interrogation sometimes. And I think it's best to even phrase it upfront or throughout. If you're peppering them with questions and you can feel it getting into an uncomfortable zone, just saying something to loosen the tension, like, Jen, really appreciate you bearing with me, like not trying to interrogate you. This will only help as we get further along in the process to make sure that we're going to be the right solution or we're going to be able to be helpful for you or see if this makes sense. And I think you just need to guide them throughout that process. And that goes to when you're building out a business case and everything else.
And there's something so nuanced to what you said, but I would imagine this has a lot to do with what makes you so credible is you used if we're the right solution for you, if we make sense, rather than I'm trying to make the case in any way possible by asking you as many questions as I can to find a way. Like, I think the objectivity you bring to the conversation by qualifying it that way and saying, maybe you're a great fit. Maybe it's not the right time. Maybe you're not the right company, whatever the case may be. I think that's another thing I certainly missed early in my career. I was always trying to make someone a fit. Is it okay to actually just say, look, it's the wrong time. It's the wrong opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to when we had a conversation about a month ago, we were talking about your hashtag swipe right sales. And so it's like you're on a date and let's say I'm a dog person, and you're a cat person and you're talking about your cats and I'm allergic to cats, which I am. And I'm like, oh yeah, I love cats. I'm just going on and on. And then like we get to whatever date and you have me come over and we're cooking dinner and I have an allergic reaction to the cats. It's like, you probably should have just said that up front. Like I'm only causing myself pain by not bringing that up. And so I think the same thing goes directly with a conversation like this is you want for your sake and you want for their sake to know, is this going to be a fit or not? And so if you're talking to them about what's going on in their business and your competitor or a complementary solution or something that's completely different for you is a better fit for them, you could drag this out for the next 6 months, waste 20 hours on Zoom calls and putting together proposals and trying to fit a square peg into a round hole and lose the deal. Or you can just be upfront on that first call and just say, hey, look, I've had those conversations before where it's like, hey, look, it sounds like what you need is something more like a support ticket thing. It's like a Zendesk. You should go for that. Or like, it sounds like you actually need like a CRM. Like you should go talk to Salesforce and HubSpot. And that happens a decent amount of the time. And they're like, oh, wow, thanks. Like, I appreciate it. And so I'm like, yeah, it's all good. I don't want to waste my time or your time. I think that's the only right way to go about it versus trying to force it. And I think for me, the only way to learn that is pain. It's only going through terrible sales conversations and sales sequences that lost me a lot of time. And I probably committed bad deals and over time just learned to have better behavior around that.
Yeah, I think it's got to be like a rite of passage for sellers, right? Like we all have done this. I remember I've talked about this before, but there was this like big medical device company that landed in my territory. And I was like, man, there's like 1,000 sellers, like they're doing cool things. This is going to be my big whale this year. I mean, I spent hours and hours and hours every month, because then it became this like battle with myself. Like I've got to win them. I set the attention. We're going to do it. And to your point, I ended up just wasting all this time when there were probably better opportunities sitting in front of my face.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the beauty of sales, is like, it's good to be a dreamer and it's good to have those high hopes and be the person that can bring in that huge logo or a new industry or what, you know, that first $1 million deal or $100,000 deal of the team or whatever is like the next thing to do. And I think there's something to spending a percentage of your time on that, because it could be so meaningful, but also rationalizing, what are the chances that this actually happens? And let's not put too much time and effort into that and ignore all of the lower hanging fruit, because it's very likely that you could still hit or far exceed your number without that huge medical device company. And so if that comes in and that works out, cool. But I'm going to make sure everything else is dialed in and I'm spending the majority, 80% of my time on the right opportunities that I know are more likely to close. And so then if this bluebird comes in, it's only, you know, cherry on top.
It's gravy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
In a perfect world.
So we don't often talk about sales tech on the podcast a lot, but I do think this is a space where sales tech has just exploded to help us like with opportunity prioritization. I am curious, you mentioned a couple early on, but specifically, are there sales technologies you use today to help inform how you prioritize opportunities? And if so, how and what are those?
Yeah, I think during the account prioritization phase, I've used intent data. Like I've used G2, I've used TechTarget when I worked there. I've heard good things about other ones. I think that is helpful just to see, are these companies like, it's generally, are they doing research on my site? Are they doing research around the topics that we sell to? And like, it shows, all right, there might be something going on there. So I've used those. I love using Sales Navigator. And when I think about another way that you can prioritize accounts is, we talked about what your best customers look like. How about people that used to work at some of your best customers? They move jobs. So I get notifications. I have saved searches of when people come from case study companies and land in my territory. And that's like the holy grail. That's just a beautiful day. So I get something like that. I get if they just hired a new CRO that's going to come, I'm going to get a notification about that. If there's folks that are following my company, we happen to have a great marketing team, so I check that. If they're following us, I can use that to see what's going on. And then I won't make this a plug about Gong, but I do use Gong to identify. We could see, you essentially sync it with your CRM and it can show, are there positive things or negative things or neutral things happening in your deal? And so if I'm rolling up this deal and they've been bringing up my competitor 5 times on the last call and they've ghosted me for the last 2 weeks and we don't have a next call in the calendar, that's not looking too good. But if we have one and, you know, I have all the right titles involved, the call's tomorrow, where we've talked pricing, we've handled Medic, if that's how the system you're following, or Challenger, or whatever, it's like the kind of notches that you need to like go through individual opportunities. If they've checked all those boxes, okay, that's a healthy looking deal. And I'm going to say that's probably my number one deal right now because we've gone through the right steps together. And so I use that as well. And I'm trying to think, I think those are the few that I probably focus on the most.
Yeah. And look, by all means, you use Gong, you promote it, right? I talk about Challenger all the time. So it's okay. And you brought it up. I have to mention this. I've always been curious about this. I completely agree that Gong has a phenomenal marketing team. Like when I look at corporate accounts on LinkedIn, you always see like at best they get like 16 likes and maybe one comment from someone who works at the company, versus you look at Gong's and not only do they have really high engagement, but it's always just insightful stuff. Whether you agree or disagree with it, doesn't really matter. It does a phenomenal job of sparking a conversation, which I personally really enjoy. I'm genuinely curious, and it's totally fine if the answer is like, no, Jen, that would be a giant waste of time. But do you ever use like reactions and engagement with Gong's account to sort of identify maybe there's latent interest from a particular company, or is that just like total pipe dream?
No, I do. It's more reactive than proactive. And maybe it's just because I'm not savvy enough, but I wish, if there's any entrepreneurs out there, what I wish I could do is I wish there was a tool that could match people that are engaging with our corporate account or even other, there's a lot of fellow gongsters that post a lot on LinkedIn. And so like, if I could get who is in my target accounts that has engaged with that LinkedIn content, I don't know if that exists. If it does, I'd love to check it out. But we do get a lot of comments from sales leaders. We also get a lot, this is a little different, but there's a lot of people in a competitive space like this. I don't know if they do this with Challenger, but people will just post like, hey, we're looking at Gong and insert competitor here. Who has an opinion? And you'll get 100 comments on that. Go in and you'll see everyone's commenting about which one's better and this and that. I mean, that's a goldmine for checking out prospects that are interested or prospects that might be giving you a shout out. And it's like, oh, wow, we should try to get them for a referral or all this. So if you're in a really competitive space, I see that with other technologies too, but that's a goldmine.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny you mentioned that because I have seen so many of those posts about Gong.
Yeah.
And what I will say is like Gong usually really wins the fight. And it's so cool because I think that's what every company wants. You want people out there advocating for you on your behalf when you're not in the room. That is really, really cool to see. I imagine that's super, super cool to work for a company that has that.
Yeah. We have 8 operating principles that you have to know like the back of your hand to get hired there. And they bring them up at every team meeting, but one of them is raving fans. And so there's a lot of decisions that get made in mind of like people loving the product and loving their experience. And so there's a huge emphasis on that from your first interview with Gong to every meeting that we have. So that makes the job a little bit easier for sure.
Yeah, no, when polls came out on LinkedIn, all of a sudden it was like, what sales methodology is the worst? And you're always just watching it being like, please don't let it be Challenger.
And it's never the best. It's the worst. Which one sucks?
Which one do you hate the most? Now let's bash it in the comments. Yes, those were like my cringe moments. Tom, this has been such a fascinating conversation. I could honestly pick your brain for another hour or more, but let me wrap things up with 2 more questions. So this is a question that we ask all of our guests, and it's meant to catch you on the spot. And if you need to take a second to think about it, go for it. But we asked this question, who of anyone in sales, doesn't have to be like a VP of sales. It could be anyone that has sales in their nature. Who in sales would you take to lunch, living or dead, and why?
Wow. What a question.
Right?
Living or dead?
Mm-hmm. For what it's worth, I think last week's answer was Socrates. So just to give you an idea of the range we're going here.
Got you. The first person that came to mind, so I'm just going to, I know I've taken some time to pause because I'm trying to think of a better answer, but the first person that came to mind was Gandhi.
Oh!
Because just that lunch would be amazing. So let's just call a spade. I think we'd all agree, like, sales is life. It applies to everywhere in life. And so to be someone that stood up for what they believed in the face of so much adversity, the second name that came to mind was Martin Luther King Jr., but stands up for in that level of adversity, it has that conviction and has a peaceful way of trying the other side, regardless of how much they disagree with you, to get them to see your side. That's just masterful levels of salespersonship.
I'm going to say, like, our podcast producer, Fame, they're amazing for anyone looking for one. They thought of this question and I was like, this is so cheesy. I'm not asking this. And they were like, can you please just do it? You need to have a wrapper question in every episode. It has now become my favorite question because of answers like yours, Tom. I think it's so revealing for the type of human that we bring on this show to hear how they think about it. I love your answer. I just love it.
Do you have a trademark on that? I might need to bring that to my podcast. Honestly, that's a great one.
Take it.
What's your answer?
Oh my gosh. No one's ever asked me yet.
Well, I just did.
Okay. I'm going to go with the first thing that came into my mind, which is Josh Braun. And the reason I say that is Josh was really the person that encouraged me to find my voice in sales and to start doing more of this type of stuff and writing more authentically. And so I really think he changed my career by having that one little 30-minute conversation.
I love it. I'd love to have lunch with him too.
Right? Interesting dude. Interesting dude. Awesome. You're welcome to steal it. I think the ideal dream, I think Amy Voles was on And she said, Richard Branson. She goes, if you can make that lunch happen, like, I'll be a listener for life. And I'm like, okay, yeah. I don't have any ties there, but I'll do, I'll do my best. So one day we'll broker the date. Awesome. Okay. So last question, where can our listeners find you, both you personally, and then obviously the podcast that you host?
Yeah, for sure. Easiest place will be LinkedIn. So Tom Alamo, like you mentioned, work over at Gong and do the Millennial Sales and Pavilion podcast. But I post just about every day on there and my DMs are open. Feel free to connect and would love to hear what you thought of the episode and what you liked and always down to chat with folks. If you're into podcasts, which I imagine you are because you're listening to one, I run Millennial Sales, which is helping young salespeople in their careers, and then Pavilion, which is more for executives that are looking for the tips and tricks that they need to be successful in their roles. So check me out in any of those spots.
Yes. And I will absolutely vouch for that. I think in particular, the Millennial Sales Podcast, I love the niche of helping people that are younger in their sales careers. I know when I was starting to sell and back in the day, we won't name years, I would have loved to have been able to have advice from you and some of the amazing guests you have. So if you're listening and you're a newer AE, I could not recommend this more. It's definitely geared at some of the challenges that you're facing when you're newer on. So thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. I had such a great time talking to you, learning from you. I certainly learned some things. I know our listeners did too, but thanks again, Tom. It was great to have you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jen. Appreciate it.
Thanks, as always, for joining us here on Winning the Challenger Sale. For the tools and resources you need to close more deals, head over to challengerinc.com.